welcome back to What a Ride, presented for Radio Sydney for Australian Broadcasting Media. And with us today is myself, Rupert Guinness, one of the two hosts of this show. And the other co-host is Aaron S. Lee from the United States, who's with me on the line now. Aaron, we've got a chock-a-block edition of What a Ride on this episode. We're going to talk about a whole heap of things, ranging from the wrap-up of the summer of cycling in Australia. We're going to have a quick look at the one of the big stars of the Australian track team for the World Championships in England, Anna Mears. We're going to touch on the tragedy of Dave Mirra, the BMX legend who lost his life recently, and the issue of depression in sport. And, of course, we're going to not let this edition pass without us discussing the life after the Super Bowl in the United States. And also, we're going to finish off with bike fit expert specialist Robert Driscoll. But Aaron, welcome back to the show, mate. Are you as excited as I am?
Well, I am totally excited, Ruth, but I got to be honest with you, I'm still probably in a bit of recovery mode. As you're well aware, New Orleans has been quite a party the last couple of weeks with Mardi Gras, obviously underway, and it concluded with Fat Tuesday last week, and I think I'm still a bit in a bit of a celebratory hangover, so to speak. It's a hard thing to get out.
Well, everyone's allowed that every time of the year, this time of the year, particularly over there. It's funny how you call it Fat Tuesday. I don't know, what do you call Wednesday, Wild Wednesday?
Well, I guess you could there, Ruben. It's actually called Ash Wednesday, which is obviously Fat Tuesday. It's the whole Mardi Gras concept is based around the Catholicism and the Catholic holiday period of Lent, leading up until Easter. So Ash Wednesday, the whole purpose of Fat Tuesday is a bit of debauchery and excess, I believe, before you give up something for Lent, which is traditionally, in the olden times, for the biblical time, so to speak, was meat. You give up red meat or whatever, but I guess in more modern times now, you're just supposed to give up something that you can't, normally live without, and provide a bit of a sacrifice for 40 days in the lead up to, of course, Good Friday and the Easter holidays. But for me, I haven't really, I'm not practicing much anymore, so I haven't really given up anything.
Well, we're here in Sydney, we've got Mardi Gras coming up. It's not too far away in the next few weeks or several weeks. And we're getting to the end of our summer of cycling, or the end of summer total in Australia. But the cycling season is in Australia sort of come and gone, and now everything's sort of in the thick of the Middle East at the moment, and then going to crank up over in the United States. No, not in the United States, mainly in Europe with the big classics. It's been too long since we've seen some bike racing in Europe, and I'm really looking forward to it. Aaron, let's take a little break, and we'll come back after this little selection of music from you. If you could just dip your fingers into your LP collection there, and we'll come back after this bit of music.
Yeah.
Well, you're listening to What a Ride with Rupert Guinness and Aaron S. Lee. As we said, we're going to talk about many things on this episode, but first up, we're going to talk to Aaron about life after the Super Bowl. Like, how do Americans pick themselves up, probably literally as well as metaphorically, after the Super Bowl? And, you know, we saw, as always, the Super Bowl finals. It's a great show. But, Aaron, interested to see what you felt about the Super Bowl this year. Was it a great game, or was it not? Because I hear, like, defense ended up winning the game.
Well, it really did. You know, the old adage in American football is that the defense wins championships, and of course, that was the case for the Denver Broncos, which are led by one of the most prolific quarterbacks in the history of the NFL, the National Football League, Peyton Manning, who is a New Orleans native. Of course, Peyton Manning, his father, legendary New Orleans quarterback, New Orleans Saints quarterback, Archie Manning, his brother, quarterback, that's Peyton's brother, Eli Manning, at the Super Bowl winning New York Giants a few years ago, and of course, there's Peyton, who had won a Super Bowl previously with his former team, the Indianapolis Colts, before being traded to the Broncos. So it was a really good win, obviously, and a very exciting time here in New Orleans, who became de facto Denver Bronco fans over the weekend. But you know, it was kind of rumored that they expected that this would be Peyton's last game. He's 39 years old. He's lost a bit of steam from his arm, and you know, he's not moving quite as well as he has, obviously, previously in his career. He suffered a few injuries that actually had him sidelined a bit this year, and they've got a young quarterback prospect that filled in quite nicely. But now there's a little bit of talk now that Peyton may actually come back for another season. But if so, I read today on Fox Sports that it won't be with the Denver Broncos.
Ah, so who do you think it will be? I mean, is he chasing the money? It's not like he needs it, or is it just the sense of wanting to have a change?
Yeah, well, Rupe, I think it's one of those things where we see a lot in boxing, don't we? Where the aged champion just doesn't know when to walk away, and there's probably not a better scenario in the world, a more storybook scenario than going out on top and winning a world title or a national championship or something like that. And obviously, it'd be nice probably for Peyton to step away. But I guess he's still got that champion's pride. Wants to, you know, he's had that taste of victory again, and he wants to have another crack at it. Of course, they ended up beating the Carolina Panthers, who only lost one game all season and was led by young NFL MVP Cam Newton. And of course, Cam drew a lot of controversy at the post-game media conference, and that it looked like he was a bit of a sour loser, so to speak. But I don't necessarily think that was the case. I think there was it came out in the end that they were overhearing a press conference in another room, and he was listening to the Denver Broncos, one of the defensive players, more or less kind of put down the Carolina Panthers offense, and Cam just, as you would, just had a bit enough of hearing about it and decided he'd just walk away during his own press conference. So rightly so, I guess. But yeah, it was just an interesting game, and I think everything's back to normal again here in New Orleans. If the Saints aren't in it, at least one of the homegrown sons were.
Okay, now what about with away from the game itself, though, with the whole festival around the US over the Super Bowl final? I mean, is the week after a slow week for Americans, or is it, where do they direct their attention to on the sporting spectrum?
Well, you know, it actually is. Of course, one of the big things around the Super Bowl weekend is obviously national recruiting for the colleges. The NCAA Division I A schools are recruiting some of their high school prospects that will be coming into the collegiate levels the following year. So that is that's a big time. Turning our attention to basketball, and then obviously the spring training is about to kick off underway for Major League Baseball. So there's a little bit going on, but there is a bit of a lull afterwards. Again, there's been a lot of talk, a lot of stuff on post Super Bowl. There was a lot of controversy, I believe. Maybe you saw it about Beyonce and her halftime performance. And it's always a little bit of controversy around the. It wouldn't be the Super Bowl without a bit of controversy. Going back to the old Janet Jackson, Justin Timberlake wardrobe malfunction. And of course, you guys, I think, have a little bit of something about halftime show problems with a little bit of the Rugby League World Cups and actually the Rugby League Championships. I think there's been some problems there with Billy Idol and things like that in the past. But yeah, there's been a little fallout with Beyonce. There was a bit of I guess a bit of noise that was made off what appeared to be a celebration of the Black Panthers movement, the minority group, the activist group from back in the 70s. That obviously, of course, there was a bit of a Olympic debacle that went along with that too. I think that was in Mexico City, I believe, or was it Munich?
Yeah, that's right. You know, so I mean, memories are still pretty strong of that, and it's always referred to. And obviously, we're into an Olympic year this year, Aaron. Has the Olympic groove sort of struck yet in the States? I know here in Australia, it's just starting to pick up now.
Yeah, I think there's a little bit of noise, but you know, to be quite honest, I don't know that I've ever seen a precursor to an Olympiad that is so quiet. And there's just not a lot of noise. A lot of talk going on, at least here, with the Olympic Games coming up, and I'm not sure what that's from. If that's just if maybe the Olympic Games or perhaps, I don't know, a group, have they outlived their usefulness? Is there so much attention towards more mainstream commercial sports? Has our attention span become so small that it's so short that we can't comprehend something that's still, you know, six, seven months away? I'm not sure. That's been a lot of talk about the Olympics, but I'm sure that'll pick up as it grows closer, for sure.
Yeah, look, I agree with you there, Aaron. I think also you hit the nail on the head with, you know, I mean, with professional sports and all so much sport becoming broadcasted. And also, I think in the current environment where sports like athletics are going through their doping crisis, a lot of interest as to whether Russia should be there at the Olympic Games at all in any sport. Obviously, cycling has its doping past, and I shouldn't say just past, I'm sure it still happens. And maybe there's a sort of out there in the sporting world, there's a little sense of apprehension that whether these games are going to necessarily be necessarily going to match the image of what Rio's all about, because perhaps I think people are bracing themselves for some some issues such as doping, if not we've seen in other sports, match fixing in tennis and things like that. So I think maybe the market, the public are generally getting a little bit sort of sceptical and wary.
Well, you know, it's funny, it seems like over the last, going back to the Beijing Olympics, and even we can include some of the Commonwealth Games, not so much Glasgow, but back when they were hosted in Delhi, it seems like there's always that little air of apprehension and skepticism going into the Games. Will the host nations, will the host cities be able to pull it off? I know there's been a lot of controversy and a lot of talk and reporting there about would Rio be able to pull this off in time, with a lot of the infrastructure still quite, you know, not set in stone, so to speak. But I totally believe Rio will pull off a fantastic Olympic Games, and very much looking forward to it. To hit back on NFL just for one second, for all of our Australian listeners, I know that for the fans who actually do follow the NFL, a lot of focus has been on Jared Haynes on that regard, as he plays for the San Francisco 49ers. We were talking about Jared during preseason training camp back in August here on the show, but just came in the last 24 hours that the San Francisco 49ers, who have a new coach now, a new coach has been named in the offseason, and which left a little bit of a little doubt, really, whether about Jared Haynes' future, because the coach and his staff were real proponents of Jared. But the new coach has come in from the Eagles, the Philadelphia Eagles, and the 49ers declined a trade that would have sent Jared Haynes to another team. That's all in the last 24 hours. So Jared Haynes is still quite set as a San Francisco 49er moving into the 2016 season.
Well, that sounds like good news. Sounds like he's still very much in the frame there. Unlike Australian soccer legend Tim Cahill, who's just overnight, his team in China have told him that he does, or the new coach there has told him that he doesn't fit into their plans for next year. So I guess one person's fortune and Jared Haynes is another person's misfortune in Tim Cahill. Obviously different football codes, but it just shows how tenuous footballers, or if not sports stars, futures can be, no matter how big a name they are or not.
No, absolutely. But I guess that goes a bit with any of us. If you lose a step, and sooner or later you're replaced by a younger, faster, sleeker, better model. But I'll tell you, I'm just hearing this now, Roop, obviously about Tim. So, you know, what a great amb- ambassador for the sport. He is, I'm sure his future is still a lot of bright things and great things ahead, but he is, hats off to him, Chef Oakes, he has done an amazing job of helping put soccer in Australia on the map.
Yeah, you're dead right there, dead right. Okay, well, you're listening to What a Ride with Rupert Guinness and Aaron S. Lee. We're going to take a little break, listen to a little bit of music, and we're going to come back and just have a quick recap on the summer of cycling in Australia and the question of whether the Australian races really did need a marquee name or not. It was one of the continuing issues, so stay tuned and we'll speak shortly. And Aaron S. Lee. Just before that bit of music, I said we're going to talk about the question in the summer of cycling in Australia as to whether marquee names are needed in the Australian races or not. And we were talking earlier about how tenuous marquee sports stars, their futures can be or not. And Aaron, one thing was remiss of me, I forgot to ask you about Peyton Manning. Just going back to the Super Bowl final there. You know, he's come under the spotlight recently for some of his of allegations of his past back, I believe, when he was, well, several years ago anyway. Can you enlighten darkness a little bit, because I know it's made the headlines in the US, and it has actually come to the fore here in Australia. And I guess at the very least, it shows that the polish that was around his image may not necessarily be so bright as it's been put out to be.
You're spot on, Ruud, but, you know, Peyton Manning has always had a bit of a squeaky clean image, that all-American boy next door appeal. And, of course, we mentioned, you know, son of an NFL legendary quarterback, Archie Manning, brother, a fellow Super Bowl-winning quarterback, Eli Manning. So this was a bit of a surprise. This goes back to his college playing days. We mentioned earlier that he played for the University of Tennessee, the Vols. It was quite successful. Well, it made headlines back then because he chose to stay his senior year and play and forego an opportunity as a junior to enter the NFL ranks and go for a lucrative multi-million-dollar pro contract. That was something that was just starting to become the vogue thing to do, so to speak, where athletes would leave as an undergraduate and chase the money, which I don't necessarily disagree with, because you do obviously run risk of injury. There are lots of examples of athletes doing just that and then missing out on a pro career. But, of course, this goes back to 1996 allegation. Peyton Manning is one of several Tennessee athletes and members of their sports administration that has come under fire for over 27 different examples, specific examples of sexual harassment and discrimination being levied by one of the associate trainers there. And so that could be a real dark spot, a real tarnishment to what has been an absolutely stellar career, both on and off the field.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see whether that impacts his future, as to whether, will it impact whether he will continue playing for another year or not. Obviously, it impacts a lot of other things too. The issue itself, the person who's made the allegations and is the alleged victim, because obviously these issues are not just about the superstar that's targeted. It's obviously a lot of other people who are affected by it, and if the allegations are true, certainly to the victim concerned. Now, another big marquee name in the world of sport who is certainly accustomed to a lot of scrutiny, and the scrutiny of a different nature, I should stress, is Chris Froome, the 2-time Tour de France champion. He was in Australia to get some training in and also take part in and race and win the Herald Sun Tour, which sort of signed off on the summer of cycling. Now, Chris Froome, he knows all about scrutiny coming on him. He's had to deal with it over his last few years, particularly as he's been leading and then winning the Tour de France. A lot of that scrutiny is over the legitimacy of his performances and the inevitable question of doping or not. Anyway, but we're not here to talk about that in this segment. We're also going to talk about, though, how well he won the Herald Sun Tour. He won the final stage up Arthur's Seat to also take the yellow jersey off his British teammate Pete Kenyuk, the British champion who won the Cadel Evans road race. Now, I guess the question I wanted to ask Aaron, and it was a question that was continuing on during the summer of cycling, as to whether Australia's racers need the big marquee names such as Chris Froome. At the Tour Down Under, there was no major international marquee name. We had Aussie marquee names. But it was a question of whether these racers need them or not. The Cadel Evans road race had Mark Cavendish. He didn't finish the race. But then again, you had Froome who goes and wins the Herald Sun Tour. What's your view, Aaron? I mean, can you have a really good race without marquee names, or do you need a marquee name to sell the race to the broader general audience?
Well, I'll tell you, I think our friend Ryder Heyerdahl would disagree with you about the marquee international names coming to the Tour Down Under.
Yeah, I'm standing corrected again. We did have obviously a marquee name in Ryder Heyerdahl, 212 Giro d'Italia winner and a multi Olympian who was at the Tour Down Under.
Absolutely, a guy who's actually. He's looking at, we were talking about the Rio Olympics, Ruud, but we're looking at a guy who's possibly going to go to his fourth Olympiad, three on the road, and of course, he started his Olympic experience as a mountain bike rider. When you look at the names, obviously, you mentioned Mark Cavendish at the Cadel Evans Great Ocean Road Race, which also Ryder Heyerdahl did ride. And then we look at the Herald Sun Tour, as you mentioned, Chris Froome, phenomenal. Two podiums, he finished second on stage one, fourth on stage two, and of course, winning Arthur's Seat, which is absolutely one of the world class ride anywhere in any race, and to win GC, and then of course, when you look at the podium and at the Tour Down Under with guys like Gerrans and Dennis and Port, I don't think we're missing out on anything. I think, if anything, it was more exciting than ever. And look, Tour de St. Louis, it had a lot of marquee riders. It had Quintana and Nibali and Sagan. But you know what? I don't think the caliber of racing there was any better or was any more publicized than it was at the Tour Down Under. And, of course, Fidel Evans' Great Ocean Road Race in its second year was phenomenal. And then Harold Suntour, Chris Froome really kind of put that race back on the map, so to speak. And that's a race that has a long, rich history.
Yeah, look, I agree with you. I think we had a great summer of cycling, to be honest, from start to finish. And I just think, it was great that Chris Froome sort of signed off on the summer of cycling with that win. It sort of showed he and the Sky team, because obviously Pete Kenyuk was leading from after stage one, how they respected the race. And the best way to respect it is to race it. You know, they could have just poked around and used it as training miles and not done anything, but that would have been a long way to come just to do that. So I thought it was a great summer of cycling, and I think that the Tour Down Under, a lot of people saw some great racing, and again, the Cadel Evans race I thought was better than the inaugural event, which I thought was still one of my favourite events of the year last year. So I really don't think we can ask for too much more. I think probably some of the courses may be tweaked a little bit just to the betterment to create some sort of change, but that's about it. But, now we're looking ahead. You know, as I said, we're in the Middle East now. Well, we're not. We're poles apart, aren't we, Aaron? Literally, almost. But soon enough, we'll be heading towards the major classics in Europe, which I'm really excited for. It's easy to get this early in the season, but have so much racing to have seen and talked about that you tend to forget we've still got another, 11 months of the year to go?
No, absolutely. Of course, you know, it seems like the Middle East, so the world of cycling is just kind of concentrated there. It was great to see Marcel Kittel get back on the win board, so to speak, and there at the Dubai Tour. He was able to take two stages over Mark Cavendish, and then obviously take not only the general classification, but also the points classification as well. Really good to see that. It just seemed like we were unsure of Marcel Kittel's future after last year. He just kind of disappeared, didn't he?
Yeah, that's right. But I think everyone's better for it now that he's back, and I think there's going to be some great tussles amongst the sprinters. It's good to see Mark Cavendish get back in Tour of Qatar. He won that overall and bagged two stage wins. But Christoph got three stage wins there, so I think we're going to have some mighty battles up there at the front end of the peloton in those bunch sprints. And I think come the Giro, we'll get to see a lot of those guys there together in one race. Whom will it be? Caleb Ewan and the Orica Green Edge team. So I'm pretty pumped for what's coming up. Aaron, let's just take another quick break. And when we come back, we're going to talk still on cycling, but we're going to change track, literally, to the track, and about Anna Mears. You're listening to What a Ride with Rupert Guinness and Aaron S. Lee. Welcome back to What a Ride with Rupert Guinness and Aaron S. Lee. We're just talking about the Australian Summer of Cycling that came to an end recently, but it wasn't all about what happened on the road. It also happened on the track, and in Adelaide we saw the Australian Track Championships, from where the Australian team was selected to take part in the upcoming World Track Titles in London from March 2 to 6. The superstar of the Australian Championships was none other than Anna Mears. Anna Mears won three titles, the Triple Crown, the team sprint, the individual sprint, and then the Kieran. Now, Aaron, you know, this for Anna Mears, 11 times the world champion. She's won 36 national titles. She's Olympic gold medals as well, notwithstanding. I mean, what a star she is. I mean, she never ceases to amaze me how good she is and also how strong she is.
No, you're exactly right. She seems to be ageless too, Rupe. I think she's, and correct me if I'm wrong, I think she's 32 years old now. Is that sound right?
Look, she'd love you for saying that she's ageless, and I'm not going to confirm or deny her age. I'm going to leave that pressure on you. You can go down with that one.
Oh, thank you so much. Maybe you could do some Wikipedia searching while I look for that right now. And yes, she is in fact 32 years of age. Thank you, Wikipedia. September 21st, 1983. But she seems to be forever ageless, and she seems to also just keep getting better and better. And of course, she won this year again over Stephanie Morton, who had won the title in 2013. Stephanie Morton, an Olympic champion herself in her own right, in the Paralympics. Where she was the pilot of a rider, and she's just 25 years old. It seemed like Stephanie was starting to get better of Anna over the last 2 years, Rube, to me. But now here we are getting, we're sniffing, we're so close to Rio. We talked about it early in the show. We're sniffing Rio start so close, and it seems like Anna, like a fine wine, just keeps getting better and better.
Yeah, it's amazing. Our erstwhile colleague, Rhys Homfrey from the Advertiser in Adelaide, he just last week had a terrific story where he revealed some of the personal strife that Anna Mears has had to deal with over the last year, where she still managed to come up with such performances, but she separated from her husband, and she spoke to Rhys about how hard that was to deal with it, and it's just amazing where she is now. But just during the national titles, We picked up a couple of interviews from her, and we've got them here for you. And I know it's been a couple of weeks now, but it just shows a bit of the side about Anna. Now, there's two short interviews here. The first is just after she qualified for the sprint final. That was her second of three titles. She beat Carl McCulloch in the semi-final. Now, this interview with her was taken just after that, and it just talks about her pathway to the final. She talks about some of the difficulties of handling the pressure, her pathway to the final, and also the challenges of being number one. Have a listen to this. It's an intriguing insight to her. And then after that, we'll come back and have a listen to another interview with her.
Back wheel now. Mears accelerates. McCulloch this time closer up the straight. Mears coming. McCulloch at her. Mears gets there. She's into the final again.
Yeah, this one was a hard-fought one. Very hard-fought. I've been nursing a quad strain since Friday last week, and qualifying didn't go so well yesterday, and I was really unsure. And, you know, I think I drew a really hard semi with Carly, and I just wanted to get through the semi. That's all I just wanted tonight, just get through the semi. And I feel like I rode really well, gave myself some confidence, and I just wanted to lay some hard races along the line for Steph, because I know she's been in great form. You know, 10-9 in qualifying, the first woman ever to go sub-11 at the national championships. She's just going better and better and better, and I've really got to work so hard to stay on top.
Now Mears has got her jammed up on the fence. No love lost there, and going to hold her there. Great racing at the moment. That's great tactics. Now it's about speed and power. Mears, Morton on the outside. Mears on the inside. Side by side they go. Up the straight. Mears and Morton. They go to the line. I think Mears has got them.
No, it's real pressure. You know, there are three, you know, with all due respect to all the women in the field, there are three very, very strong contenders in myself, Steph and Carly McCulloch, of which all three can ride in different positions in the team sprint. All are capable in the sprint and all are capable in the Kieran, you know, especially where anything can happen. So each time you get on the track, you've got to put your best performances forward, even if you're sick or you've got an injury or you've got some niggle or, you know, something's gone wrong. You've always got to put performances out. I know that, and sometimes it can compound with pressure and expectation. I try to do my best to do my best and not focus on it.
Mears there, doing it all the same as the first race. Mears accelerating. Morton can't get there at the moment. Mears is going to add another medal, gold medal to a tally. Anna Mears, Australian champion.
I'll be honest, I don't really think I've had pressure of this depth for a very, very long time, not since the days of Kerry and Rosalie Hubbard, you know. And that was very early on in my career. And even though there's been spot challenges with people along the way, this is probably the deepest we've gone in the women's sprinting ranks. So in one way, I feel really proud of it. And in another way, it's like it's checking me, which is good. On myself and what I can do and how I can improve and how I can keep the positive self-talk there. And believe me, it's hard, you know. It's, a lot of people, I think, have the perception that because it's been done by myself so many times before, it's expected, it's easy, it's the norm, but it's really difficult. It continues to be very, very difficult, and I have to challenge myself all the time.
Well, there you were. You were just listening to Anna Mears talking just before, or just after she qualified for that final of the sprint of the national titles. So have a listen to this. This is also Anna after she won the Kieran title, which was her third of three titles, and it made her the rider of the tournament. Now here she talks about, looks a bit further ahead towards Rio, but she talks again about the depth of women's sprinting in Australia, because it's not just about her and Stephanie Morton, but as we said before, Carl McCulloch gave her a good shake in the semi-final for her to get into that final. So let's just have another listen to Anna Mears talking after she won the Kieran final to jag three titles out of three.
Here comes Mears. Mears coming back at her. Morton. Mears coming up there. Up the straight. They go to line. Mears, Morton and Belder. Anna Mears has done it. The world champion. What a ride. She led it.
Anna Mears, what a win. again, hard fought race. Wasn't quite convinced to let Steph roll over me lap and a half out, so I fought her a little bit and then was comfortable that she wasn't dragging people with her, so then I was happy to let her slide in front of me at the bell and then just was jumping at the bit to try and come back around. I was seeing stars in the last bend and hoping that she was going to keep a nice tight line, because otherwise I would have hit her, yeah. Really happy. As much as the results I'm really pleased with, it's more how I've been able to conduct myself, how I've helped myself mentally, how I've made decisions, you know, what I've seen and how I've acted in races is what gives me the most confidence. And I know that as hard as these races are, riders like Carly, like Ricky, like Courtney, like Stephanie are pushing me, and not just me but themselves as well. So we're actually, I think, going to be in really good stead by the time we come to the international competitions of the World Champs in 4 weeks' time and ultimately Rio. Thing to win them, it's another thing to ride in them and in front of an incredible crowd. I mean, the crowd has just turned out this week, and these are the best numbers I've seen people out turn out support track cycling for a long time. So big, big thanks to everyone who turned out.
Welcome back to What a Ride with Rupert Guinness and I was about to say Anna S. Mears, Aaron S. Lee. But I know, Aaron, you just heard those words from Anna Mears. I mean, she's so eloquent, isn't she? She'd do a better job on this show than I would. So
she does quite well. As a matter of fact, she's done some TV and some television, some race hosting there in the past. I see that as a potential future for her, post cycling career, but of course she's not going to be hanging it up anytime soon. She is a fantastic, not just a fantastic track cyclist, but she's a fantastic ambassador for sport, and not just women's sport, Ruth, all of sport. And you know, I've said this quite a few times. I'd like to throw this out there and get your thoughts on this. I've often said that Anna Mears, and when it comes to cycling, and in Australia specifically, Anna Mears would probably be up there, and you might could throw Caroline Buchanan into this mix a bit, but definitely Anna Mears and Cadel Evans are the two. You ask 9 people or 10 people on the sidewalk who Cadel or Anna Mears, I believe 9 people or so would know who they are. Whereas I'm not so certain that those same 10 people, that 2 or 3 of them would even know a Simon Gerrans or a Richie Porte.
Yeah, look, I think you're pretty much on the money there. I think, you know, I mean, obviously all may change by the end of this year. But, I mean, right now I think, you know, Anna Mears is a household name, definitely, without a doubt, and Cadel Evans. And when we're talking about household names, you know, we have to think real top shelf, top of the mark athletes who have really gone beyond just etching their names within their respective sports. We're talking about people who, as you said, you can go into any household and you said the name Anna Mears or Cadel Evans, they would know what their hallmark achievements are, and there's every chance that they will have seen them in the public somewhere, because they're both athletes who will go out there and engage in the public, particularly Anna Mears. I remember after the last Olympics when they had the Welcome Homes celebration or march in Sydney, and she was at the back of the field of all the athletes, and she was one of the last athletes as they reached Town Hall still signing autographs from the public, because I remember I sort of hung back just to watch Anna Mears, and she was soaking it up, all up, the, you know, all the atmosphere of it all and everything. But she was giving back to the public. She didn't rush when she had photos taken with the punters on the street. She signed autographs, and she was smiling nonstop.
Do you find that, Rupert, because of, you know, Anna being a track athlete or track cyclist, and of course we mentioned some of the great road cyclists there, well, you know, the triathletes are often phenomenal as far as meeting with the fans and age groupers and the media and whatnot. And obviously, those sports, I think, it kind of attracts a certain caliber of person. But let's face it, those sports just simply aren't as mainstream as rugby or soccer or, you know, American football or baseball, cricket, to where they don't have the time demands on them that some of those guys, those professionals do, to where they can be a little bit more available to the public.
Yeah, I think you're pretty right there too. You know, as you know, another side about Anna Mears, which is going to be absolutely of massive gain for the Australian team in Rio, is her experience and her ability to handle the pressures. I mean, she's going to have enough pressure on herself and her own expectations of what she will want to do. But her presence alone for the younger athletes coming through on that cycling team will be absolutely massive. And you know, while she's going to be focused on her own task, she will certainly help out other athletes when and where she can, but like I said, just her presence alone will help younger athletes, particularly the Olympic debutantes. It'll help settle their nerves because they'll see how she handles it all, and if anybody can get through anything, that's Anna Mears.
Well, you know, it's probably been about a year or so since I've actually had a chance to chat with Anna, and I remember the last time I talked to her, I just asked her, said, look, how long are you going to do this? How many more years do you want to ride that bike? And she said, you know what? I'm going to be riding that bike when I'm 80 years old, and I'll be on that velodrome. I may not be competing, but I'll be out there on the boards and having a go.
Yeah, I remember when you did that interview, because she came up to me and said, who is that guy?
Yeah, no, fair enough. And by the way, thanks for getting me that interview, too.
Okay, you're listening to Water
Ride. Checks in the mail.
You're listening to Water Ride with Rupert Guinness and Aaron S. Lee. I think it's about time we have some music. We're going to have another shift in gear, another shift in pace when we come back, and we're going to talk about a person who's been lost to the world, not just of cycling, but of sport, Dave Mirra, and the consequences and ramifications of his tragic passing. Stay tuned to this bit of music, and we'll speak afterwards.
Don't let your light a past that doesn't let me choose. Well, once there was a darkness deep in endless night, gave me everything you had. Oh, you gave me life, and I will remember you. Will you
Welcome back to What a Ride with Rupert Guinness and Aaron S. Lee. Just before that bit of music, we were just talking about the passing of Dave Mirra, the BMX super legend, who was also left his name in the world of rallycross racing as well. But he was a superstar of the sport. Tragically, he left this world, and His tragic passing had ramifications around the world. Aaron, can you just first up just let us up in a little bit about Dave Mirra and what sort of legacy he's left to the sport, and also your feelings about what happened to him, because obviously you know quite a lot about his story, and so if you just fill us in a bit there.
Well, absolutely. Well, you know, Dave Mirra, an American hero, especially the BMX and the X Games, so to speak. He won a medal at the X Games in every year from 1995 to 2009, with the exception of 1 year there, 2006. He won 24 medals in all at the X Games and was just a phenomenal athlete. You know, he was a guy that was, you know, his name was up there with the likes of Joe Parsons or of course, Tony Hawk. Just a phenomenal athlete. And of course, you know, at age 41, just 3 years younger than myself, on February the 4th, 2016, he obviously took his own life with an apparent self-inflicted gunshot wound there in his home, Greenville, North Carolina. And I think, you know, what a tragic loss. I mean, you mentioned, obviously, he had crossed over to rallycross. You know, you and I, we really love and have a lot of respect for athletes who try different sports and mix it up a little bit. He had just moved into to 2014. He'd started a career in triathlon. And I had the opportunity to, we touched base a few times to try to connect for a couple of interviews, and we just never could, you know, as you know, so, as often the case, we couldn't lock down a time. And before you knew it, time had passed. And now, you know, unfortunately, I'm not going to have that opportunity to pick up that phone and chat with him. And that's a big loss. A similar situation happened with Head Wheels founder Steve Head. Tried for months for us to touch base, and we never could. And then, of course, it was too late. But a sad day with his loss, and even sadder when you realize it was something as tragic as suicide, something that you just hope and should be so preventable.
Yeah, exactly, Aaron. And I think it just goes to show that, you know, the potential for suicide and mental health issues is just as strong amongst sports people, whether they're amateurs, weekend warriors, or even the super elite champions of sport. It's not just an issue for, it's an issue actually for everybody concerned, but quite often we get the impression that the sports stars are infallible, that nothing can break them, and it shows really that They're fighting their own demons that we often don't see. Which reminds me, Aaron, you know, earlier in the, in an earlier episode, we were talking to a good friend of ours on the show, Matilda Reynolds, a triathlete who was doing a lot of work for Batir, which deals with a lot of, a lot in this area with mental health issues. And I believe, Aaron, you were rummaging around and you sort of pulled out that interview that we did with her before.
I did. In fact, I did, Ruth. That, it was an interview with Tilly back in August of last year when she was filling in for me while I was away. But she was able to share with us a little bit about what Batir is all about. And obviously, we just got word that Tilly is moved on now. She actually has a job there with Specialized now, I believe, Ruth.
That's right. She's moving down to Melbourne. If she's not, she's moved already down to work for Specialized in their marketing department.
Well, let's go to that. We wish Tilly well with that move, and we know that she'll have great success. Let's go to that interview with Tilly and just remind ourselves and our listeners just a little bit about Batir and other organizations such as Beyond Blue and places out there that obviously offer a helping hand.
Hey Tilly, look, I know that it's not just triathlon that's something that you're driven by. You know, there's Batir, the organisation that works with mental health issues. I know you've spoken to me, several times about this. I know you're going to a Batir ball tonight.
That's
I understand.
Right. Yep.
Is it a party for you? Or what?
Yeah, it's going to take about 6 hours to make me look like I'm going to a ball. But yeah, so that's on tonight. So yeah, no, thanks, Rube. So I work, I've previously worked and now volunteer for an organisation called Batir. And it's a for-purpose organisation. And what they do is they work with mental health and youth. And essentially we run school and university programs where we utilise trained speakers who have gone through a mental health who have had mental ill health and come through the other side, and we utilise them as a part of the program to share their story. And essentially what we're trying to do is just to show young people that it is okay and to seek help and to talk about it. Suicide is the biggest killer of people my age. I think you're just out of the bracket, Rube, but certainly for 45... the age 45 and under, it's the biggest cause of death, and it's something that's by choice, and that it's just the figures are horrific. What we're trying to do is just to try and, I guess, uneducate people around what they think mental health is, and it's not this big, dark, scary thing you're not allowed to talk about. It's something that you should be openly communicating about and just putting your hand up and saying, look, I am struggling, and whether that be in school or in your family, and just starting to seek help, because there are a lot of Lifeline, Beyond Blue, Black Dog Institute, there's Headspace, there's some incredible organisations who can, see you through to the other side. So whether that's your school counsellor or seeing someone else with your family, we just try and encourage people to seek help and through education and showing through these speakers that, they now live a very fulfilling, happy life, which they may not have if they hadn't sought that help in the first place.
It's interesting. Obviously, mental health is something that permeates, mental health issues is something that permeates throughout all of society, but, sport has been used as a platform to help create awareness, because I guess there's this perception, elite athletes, they're supposed to show their strengths, they're supposed to not show weaknesses. They're supposed to be, unflappable, be able to handle pressure. But obviously it's an issue that does affect sports athletes, whether they're elite or the weekend warriors. But how do you use sport as a platform and also try to make, without them sort of, I guess they have to support the cause as well, don't they? Have to feel comfortable to come out and talk.
Yeah, we're really fortunate to have a number of ambassadors, both particularly in rugby, and we'll to have more Paddy Ryan with the Waratahs. And look, we utilise sport because the people within sport have such a huge profile, and if young people can see their heroes come out and say, yeah, look, it is okay to talk, and that mental health isn't this I had it and it's not this big scary thing that, you know, you shouldn't talk about. But I certainly think, look, mental health in sport is something that absolutely needs to be addressed. I know there are bigger organisations that have a lot of player welfare, and triathlon and maybe cycling isn't one that has all the budget to be able to provide that type of support for athletes, but I can only fathom how horrifically hard it is when you put all your eggs in one basket, whether it be the Olympic Games or a certain race or trying to make a certain team, and something happens, whether it be injury or you just simply just weren't good enough to make that team. And it's really hard, I think, as an elite athlete and professional athlete, that you really define yourself by your achievements. And so if you're not going well, then you just sometimes feel like a shitty person, like, you know, a bad person. And it's really important to be able to separate yourself from the sport that you're doing and the person that you are. You know, we've seen so many people, elite athletes, do very well in their sport, retire, and then just not know what to do with themselves, and they try and make these comebacks that usually don't work. And I think that's just where they need more support. And, you know, you just need a bit more, you know, you're more than the athlete that you are, you know. So, yeah, I think it's really just the biggest thing is communication. You know, seek help. If anyone wants to know more about Batyr, just go to batyr.com.au, B-A-T-Y-R. And, you know, if you're interested in any of the programs that we run there, but I think as a whole, it's just really important for people to talk. And so whether that be your coach, your parents, your friends, you know, talking is the heroic thing to be doing. It's not a weakness. It's not an embarrassment. And I think it's really prevalent in sport.
Yeah, because, I mean, you can imagine, particularly with young people, as they grow up, there could be inherent fears that if they speak to their coach about an issue, that it could compromise their selection and things like that. But that's where I think it's important for sports federations as well to really have the right system in place where the well-being of the athlete is not just about their physical well-being and whether they're tracking well physically, and even I say mentally for competition. Not, you know, there's a difference between being right mentally for competition and you're not necessarily right deep down personally, are you? You could be carrying an issue which you don't know how to get it out.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, sport is just bloody hard, and you know, a lot of people do get paid a lot to do it, and sometimes there's a reason for that, and that can be justified. But for those who aren't sort of making the cut, that either through injury or, you know, they can be out for years, which can be really hard. And so, again, if anything, just, you know, have a chat, make sure, you know, particularly in triathlon, because there's so much training, and sometimes a lot of that's covered up by training. So if you feel like you're doing, you know, you're just hating life if you skip a session, or you don't, you know, the world is ending because you didn't get your PB in that one, you know, race or you know, small training session, I think just, you know, have a look at the bigger picture. You know, it is okay. There's worse things going on in the world, and just keep a little bit of perspective. But if you know, if that is going on, then it may be worthwhile having a chat to someone, or maybe just taking some time off.
Well, thanks, Tilly, for those words and that insight. And that, and the website address again?
It's batyr.com.au, B-A-T-Y-R.
.com.au. Yeah, you've heard it. You've heard it. We're talking with Matilda Reynolds on What a Ride. I'm Rupert Guinness.
Stay.
What a Ride with Rupert Guinness and Aaron S. Lee. Just before that nice bit of music, we were listening to Matilda Reynolds, Tilly Reynolds, triathlete, but now working for Specialized in Melbourne in their marketing department. But more importantly was the interview that we did with her earlier and the work she was doing with Batir and on the issue of mental health issues. And we were reflecting on that in the aftermath of the tragic passing of Dave Mirra. But it's a serious issue, and if any of you have concerns or if you know of friends who you suspect are struggling, don't be afraid to put an arm out or just to ask, are you okay? Or don't be afraid to ask. But let's try and pick up gear a little bit here. Aaron, I understand in your travels in New Orleans that you've been doing a few different interviews with different people, and you've been going to quite a few bike shops, but I understand you've also bumped into one of the top line bike fit specialists, Robert Driscoll. Can you tell us a little bit about him and what you spoke about, and what are we going to hear from him if that's what we're going to hear about?
Oh, no, absolutely, Ripper. Well, look, I'm a little bit of breaking news here. I just purchased my first road bike since 2006.
Wow.
So, yeah, I did. I shelled out. Obviously, Australian Broadcasting Media is paying us a handsome salary, so I was able to go out and splurge a bit, and I purchased a new 2016 Specialized Alloy Sprint X1. Now, it's an alloy bike with carbon forks, which the new, it's a top-end alloy, and I got to tell you, it weighs in around 7.5-7.6 kilos. I did splurge with some new aero bars, some new carbon aero bars, and a pair of Zip 202 carbon clinchers to make it to round the actual purchase out nicely. Photos available obviously on my Instagram or Facebook account. Please go check it out. Give a like if you do. If you don't, just please pass on by. But yes, I was able to sit down with the one and only Robert Driscoll from Pensacola, Florida, who's made a name for himself for the last 30 years as one of the premier bike fit experts. He's part of that Andy Pruitt learning tree. He's just a wealth of knowledge. He set up a shop there with the Body Geometry Fit at Bayou Bicycles here in New Orleans, and literally people from all over the world fly in and come in, drive in, walk in, ride in to see this guy. And I was able to sit down for a few minutes after my bike fit, where he had me all, I had the sensors on me and the laser lights and the levels and the computers and the diagnostics. Everything was on. He had me hooked up to everything, and it went through about an hour and a half to 2 hour fit process, and he did everything, and I was able to sit down with him for a few minutes afterwards and have a chat with him.
Well, that sounds interesting. Let's have a listen to him. But one thing I got to tell you, Aaron, you may be all set up. You've still got to ride the bike.
Oh, okay. Well, that explains why the bike hasn't done much since the bike fit. It just it looks good there on the corner of my room and here in the condo here in New Orleans. I got to tell you, I did go about 4 or 5 days without using it as a clothes rack, but as we speak, I'm looking at the bike now, and there is a shirt draped over the handlebars.
all talk. Well, instead of listening to you, Aaron, let's have a listen to Robert Driscoll and see what he has to say, the specialist in bike fit.
Aaron Lee here with What a Ride, and I'm upstairs in the lair of Bayou Bicycles with bike fit specialist extraordinaire Robert Driscoll. Robert, I almost want to call you Dr. Driscoll after what I just went through. Unbelievable. How many checkpoints, how many stations did you just put me through?
Well, we'll start off with an interview where we'll talk with the rider, find out about the different aches and ailments, things that are going on, their goals in their riding. Then we'll go through and follow a 20-step protocol that just gives me all types of little fine little things that are going on. And as a tailor of bikes, that's my tape measure. That's my area there to where, okay, up or down, forward or back, what's actually going on, looking at the back, looking at the knees, looking at everything that's really everything that's kind of going on is up there with the body. And then put the rider up and put them in some stress, and then measure everything out.
Now, of course, I mentioned we're here at Bayou Bicycles. Now, for those listening back home in Australia from around the world on iTunes, Bayou Bicycles, one of the premier bicycle shops, not only in Louisiana, but in the southeast of the United States for sure. I just purchased the Specialized LA Sprint X1, a bike you're quite familiar with because you got the limited edition, number 75 of 100. Some people obviously have better connections than I do. That said, we just fitted the bike out. I've never had a proper bike fit before like that. That was some serious science involved.
It's amazing things. And I mean, and they're great guys that they're all around the world. I mean, I have several mates down in Australia that have been doing this just about as long as I have and doing wonderful things, I mean, with it. So we bring science involved into the fit industry and the fit profession to where it's no longer that voodoo magic type set up there with a rider on a bike. We are looking at muscles, bodies, bones, everything that goes on. And so we spend a lot of time studying physiology to make certain that we do understand when riders come in and having aches and ailments, we have to kind of diagnose what's going on. Yeah.
But of course, now you obviously specialize in the high performance, both cycling and triathlon. You've got a who's who of clients throughout the years. You've got more than 20 years experience in this industry. Now, I just passed through the wall of fame downstairs coming up to the lair, and I must have encountered 200-300 names and autographs and signatures and phrases obviously commenting on their experience here. But now, you also fit just, you know, the layman as well, commuters, people
yes.
who are just looking for general fitness, kids, mothers, fathers, you name it.
Everything. I mean, because anybody that spends time on a bicycle, of course you want to be comfortable. The other thing that's great about with a proper fit is preventive medicine. We want to prevent injuries that could possibly occur due to poor knee tracking, due to different setups there. I mean, like yourself, Aaron, I mean, we found that you had a stance width adjustment based off your cue angle, and widening your stance, we're able to get your knees to where they track smoother, and that's going to not only give you a more efficient, more powerful pedal stroke, it's also going to help you out later in life with your cycling and everyday life, preventing things that do occur inside of our kneecap.
Now listen, we're up here in this fit studio, and it is remarkable. It is state of the art. There is a lot of equipment in this place. We talked about the science involved earlier. There's a lot of technology up here.
The major thing is, as fit specialists, is tools. Okay, and I have found in my 20 plus years of fitting is I want the latest and greatest tool to assist me as a tool. And so now having all of the technology available to find things or to show clients more so than it is for myself. Because as a fit specialist for doing this as long, I can take a goniometer and a plumb bob and a trainer and replicate the exact same fit within reason there can be, but for specific type setups there. And this is great. I mean, and so now with FitWise too, you know, especially one of the things that Dr. Andy Pruitt, my mentor, has taught me over the years is one, we were doing professional bike fits on the average clientele off the street before our mates in the Pro Peloton even would adhere to it. So we were able to, but now, of course, we're living in a science-driven industry. So with that science-driven industry, being able to do 3D motion capture, being able to do video capture with high-definition cameras, being able to point out small issues with a client. Then we're able to also work with professional coaches and director sportifs for the teams, and then get that rider better, more efficient, and of course in that pro level athlete, help them achieve whatever their goals are.
Please come by and visit Robert Driscoll. You can check him out on Facebook. He's also with Bayou Bicycles on their Facebook site as well. Bayou Bicycles Body Geometry Fit has their own Facebook page as well. Look them up, like them, come by and visit. And definitely, if you get a chance in your area, stop by and at least visit and chat with Robert. He's an absolute wealth of information. Back to you, Rupert.
Welcome back to Water Ride with Rupert Guinnesson, Aaron S. Lee. And Aaron, it's been a bumper edition, hasn't it, of Water Ride. We've spoken about a lot of highs and some lows, some sobering thoughts, and also with some nice sort of technical bits. Obviously, I'm not so technical, so I can't even say what they are. But anyway, nice interview there with Robert Driscoll. Anyway, Aaron, look, what's up with you in the next week? What are you up to? What are you doing? What are you thinking? Who are you talking to?
Well, you know, at the moment, I've got as I told you prior to the show, off air there, I'm a bit behind schedule. Mardi Gras and the Super Bowl has put me a little bit behind at the moment, so I'm trying to wrap up four or five magazine features coming up.
Yeah, it sounds pretty exciting, mate. It sounds like you'll be a busy boy. I'm just sort of finishing up my book, hopefully, on the history of Australian cycling. Getting to the pointy end of the manuscript, which becomes, sometimes you think the relief is coming with the end of the manuscript, but then in many ways that's the hard start. The hard part is about to start, because the editing process, the potential for creative clashes between yourself and the publisher start from there on, and then all the detail of editing and proofing and selecting pictures.
Well, what is this, Rupert? This is going to be, what, 13th, 14th book now?
I'm back into even numbers, so it'll be 14 with this book. I didn't want to sit on 13. That's a bad omen. So hopefully this book will come out nicely with some nice photos, if not the words. But I'm pretty excited about it. It's going to be for the National Library of Australia, and so at least it'll hopefully document accurately the great history of the sport in Australia. And I've learned a lot from it. But interestingly enough, there's so much of Australian cycling history, it's hard to fit into one book, but I'll get through one book first, and then we'll see what happens after that.
Well, you know, you always get the cherry assignments, and I'll tell you, this is no different. I saw the post you put up on Facebook the other day in the cycling scrapbook, and it just absolutely a flood of comments coming back and contributions, naming some just phenomenal athletes and riders over the last, you know, actually decades prior.
Yeah, I mean, that was quite fascinating, wasn't it? Like, within an hour, I think I had, like, 70 responses, and a lot of great names were put out there. And obviously, I'm not going to be able to include all those names, but, you know, it's interesting how quick you can put out there on the cycling scrapbook just a simple request, and the amount of, you know, knowledge that's out there amongst the cycling fraternity is quite amazing, let alone opinion.
And how much of those names that you received, some of the guys that they gave you that feedback, how many of those names had you already included on your list?
Well, fortunately, my list, because of that particular chapter, I can just let you know, it's just a chapter outlining the, you know, great international riders who have come to Australia, rather than just looking at great Australians who go internationally.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
And so obviously I can't go through all of them, but I just wanted to, I've written a sort of an intro about how Australia's become for a long time has been a popular destination for foreign riders, and I wanted to give a snapshot of that to show how. And I've done about 10 or 12 little biogs of some of the top stars from that massive list that I was given, and their impact on Australia and where they raced in Australia. A lot of them were track riders down in the Christmas carnivals in Victoria and South Australia, and particularly Tasmania. But you know, you'd love to be able to go back in time and sort of stand on the banks of those velodromes back in the 1930s and 20s. Just to see what it was like when cycling was an absolutely massive sport, as we hope it will still become again.
No, absolutely. Now, I've got to ask you, you're a couple of weeks removed now from the Sydney Morning Herald. How are you finding life post-Fairfax?
Oh, there is a life after Fairfax, but I have to say it wasn't as easy as I probably didn't expect. It was going to be easy, but leaving a place where you've worked with some great people and it's a great institution, it's, you know, more than 175 years old, it's not that easy just to walk away. So it was a little bit heavy on the heart. It was heavy on the head the day after my farewell, and after the last farewell, it seemed like I had a whole string of farewells. So, but life after is going well. I think this book is keeping me busy, and then hopefully in the next week or so I'll be able to firm up who I'll be working for on a regular basis for the coming season of cycling.
Well, I gotta tell you, before we head out of here, that I saw a couple of extended bits of the movie The Program, and of course you're one of the journalists that are portrayed in this movie. I got to ask you, have you had a chance to see it? And what are your thoughts on the actor that's played Rupert Guinness?
Well, yeah, I've seen it twice, actually. I saw it at a preview media preview session with a bunch of movie critics, and I went and saw it with my stepmother, where there was six people in the matinee. So different sort of. My stepmother absolutely loved it. I'm not sure how successful it was here in Australia or not, but I thought it was interesting. I thought it was a script not written for the cycling specialist. It was a script written for the general broader audience who might have heard about Armstrong, might have been aware of him being a dope cheat, but weren't necessarily aware of the whole intricacies of the story. So I thought the script was pretty honest with of how the book Seven Deadly Sins, written by David Walsh, which was a spot-on book, and certainly was very factually correct and everything. So, and didn't really answer your question there, did I? But my character, I would have had different Hawaiian shirts, I thought, and I think he had a bit more hair, but the hair he has was a lot greyer than the hair that I've got. We'll leave it at that.
Fair enough. Well, I look forward to seeing the entire episode and giving you a bit of the entire movie, and then giving you more of a critique from my side of it.
Okay, Aaron, we'll do that. Well, look, it's been a great edition of What a Ride, certainly for Aaron S. Lee and myself. I hope you all out there have enjoyed it. Thanks for joining us for another edition of What a Ride, and also stay safe out there. As we always say, a meter matters. That's it from us, from Aaron S. Lee in the States and me, Rupert Guinness, in Sydney. Hope you enjoyed it. Look after yourself, and we'll see you or hear from you, or you'll hear from us for the next issue of What a Ride.
the lonely, you lose, just like heaven.